Hello, Musky Shop.
Hey, what are you wearing?
Who is this?
It's the Guru.
Guru, just stop calling me. Come on, man. Hello, Musky Shop. This is Jay.
What's the biggest one you've ever seen?
Musky?
No.
Okay, I'm hanging up. Guru. Hello, Musky Shop. This is Jay.
Hey, what's Elmer wearing today?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I've only heard, and this is just a rumor, that he's wearing nothing but a life preserver and he is guiding on the Eagle River chain right now.
Oh, I like that.
Well, it's warm outside. You know, you got to keep cool somehow.
Oh, Jay. That's all right, folks. Here it is. The Musky 360 Podcast.
We are back.
Yo. Anyway, Jay's a pretty good sport there at the Musky Shop Tower.
Yeah, I was harassing him. He was kind enough about it to let me harass him for a couple of minutes.
You know, just relentless calls. That's one of like 60,000 calls you made this week, right? It was.
I called Jay probably 100 times a day. Just all sorts of just wacky stuff I'm doing to him.
Don't call Jay that many times, folks. We'll start there. Anyway, Guru.
Yo.
We're supposed to have a special guest this week. Special guest can't do the podcast until this weekend. He will be on next week. Anyway, we are harassing Jay. We're going to do the user Q&A. But first, let's talk about what the Guru's been doing. Man, how's your bike been this week in Wisconsin?
Well, in Wisconsin, it's been pretty good. So we have – what I've been seeing is that the Rock Hump bite is like – with the exclusion of today, the Rock Hump bite for the past 2 weeks has been like insanely good. Like it's just, I haven't even been touching weeds. It's just been Rock Hump, Rock Hump, Rock Hump, Rock Hump. What I'm seeing is I've seen a lot of bait fish that muskies like to eat are moving up onto these Rock Humps. Every single Rock Humps with chunk rock, with little gravel, little specks, some sand humps even. They're moving up on there. And they're prey's there, so there's got to be a predator nearby. And I'm either catching muskies high in the water column over the humps or right tight to rocks. And when I decide on whether to throw target fish on, depending on where they are in the water column, I look at the bait fish, and I've been seeing if they're real tight to the rock hump, I'm throwing a jointed depth rater.
Right.
If they're kind of over the rock hump, I'm throwing a bucktail because it's just kind of relating to where the bait fish are. I just caught, you know, I sent you some thunderously large
thunder on the water.
Thunder on the wonder.
Yeah, dude, you've seen some dankies. There's been some, but that's the thing that for Wisconsin, those are all like, dude, you've been wearing me out with upper 40s all week. And that's not a joke, yeah. And that's the one thing is, folks, if you're fishing that, Guru, you got a couple messages this week from people that transitioned because of what we were saying last week. You've been smashing and bashing, and a lot of this is just getting over those humps, getting on, you know, getting out of the weeds. But the same thing as this is like, don't you, like today, you got one in the boat today, but it was like you went, okay, the hump bite's not there. Let's get back to where we were a few weeks ago, though.
These things are running back and forth. Yeah, what I noticed today is that I went out there. It was like a 15-mile-an-hour wind, white caps, 3-footers, and I look at the rock humps, and there's not a single bait fish on my rock humps. So I went to the reeds. I went to the weeds. I mean, I looked for suspended bait fish, nothing. Yeah. Went to the weeds, main lake point, caught a muskie.
Well, and the thing is this, is like, you know, we got so many people there in Wisconsin – And that's why we're keeping abreast on this is like you just came out with a new article talking about getting a jump on the fall transition, you know, pre-turnover before all that crap goes down, yeah. Which is, you know, these fish, they're going to transition out, But when
it's happening right now.
It's happening now, and a lot of people are like behind the eight ball where it's like the summer bike starts changing and you're seeing lower returns. I mean, it's the same thing though, is like if you're there at sunup, you might want to be on those weeds. You know, but don't forget, you've been sending me like some moonrise, moonset monsters.
Middle of the day kind of stuff. Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, if there's bait present there, which goes to, you know, sort of using electronics and just, I mean, let me do this, and I not to put words in your mouth or anything like it. Like, what's the process in those tannic stained waters? Like, how much bait are you looking for? What's sort of like your litmus test? You go, okay, I'm really seeing a solid bait school, or is it scattered bait? What are you seeing on the depth finder?
Well, on the humps, I'm looking for like bananas. Like there's walleye in the humps, there's perch on the humps, or there's
humps and bananas. Yep. Humps and bananas. Humps, bananas.
Hump the banana.
Hump the banana.
Do the banana split.
It's about to turn a Gregorian chant here in a second. Continue, I apologize.
Anyway, so when the bait fish that I'm catching muskies around on the rock humps right now, if you go over it, you will see little arcs. I call them bananas. They look like a banana.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bananas on my boats because we all know that is bad luck.
That is the snake. Yes.
It's very bad. But I look for these tiny little humps, tiny little little bananas.
My lovely lovely musky humps. My humps, my humps, my humps. Black eyed peas. R.I.P. Are we so immature we can't say the word hump or banana?
Yeah, I don't think we can do it.
Is this episode called Banana Humps?
It is.
Sorry. God. Folks, I promise, me and Tyler are just complete nerds, and it's just, you know, those words just resonate. So anyway, you're seeing marks that you're are you thinking those the bananas? Are these bananas musky lunjos? Are they just like bigger bait fish? Or are you think you're seeing actual muskies on the humps?
I'm seeing both. Okay.
You're right.
So I'm seeing little bananas, and every once in a while you'll see it go. I can't say bananas.
Tyler, have you seen my little banana?
No, I need a microscope.
Anyway, continue.
So I see these little arcs.
I see these little bananas. Yes. Worst podcast ever. Continue, it's little banana man. It was Booker told me today. He's like, listen. He said, I'm not worried about sponsor for you guys. He said, other than AA. Anyway.
So what I do is I'll drive. If there's a rock up I'm interested in looking at, I will drive right over the middle of the thing and all around it just to see what's on it. And you'll see some big arcs, and that could either be a big musky or it could be some sort of big walleye. You don't really know what it is.
Right.
I'm looking for bait fish holding on the breaks of the hump or on the top of the hump. And those are either little arcs, or there can be little stacks of bait fish that look like a Christmas tree, which could be like perch or panfish or whatever the heck it is. When I see that, I pull out to the edge of the hump and I start casting all around, and I pick it apart. There's one hump that, you know, Steve, that's like super small. I'll spend 45 minutes on it picking out every single rock that's on it, because I use my side scanning sonar. I look at every little crack and crevice, and I put a bait in every single one until I catch a fish, and I usually do.
Well, I mean, I'm always looking for a banana in a crack and crevice. So, you know, that's what I'm going for. But, you know, spending time and exploring every crevasse is sort of right up my alley.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, now I know what you're saying. Oh, my God, Tyler. Folks, if you only know how much we're fishing, we're both sunburnt, we're both tired. I am brought to you this evening by Pepsi Clear. Anyway, now a lot of that is like what me and you've worked on the boat, you know, about with a rock hump, it's not as like clearly defined of what a weed edge would be sometimes, you know? Yeah, and it's just
you
like,
you can't see it.
And dude, okay. Straight up. You remember that fish we didn't catch? Mm-hmm. The one on the corner of that rock.
Yeah.
And like every day he moves. So that's the thing is like really spend the times. Cause it like me and Tyler have talked about, and I just really pound about the thoroughness on rock reefs or rock humps is just every angle, every direction you can sort of hit that thing and just really overwork it, you know?
And, you know, with these rock humps.
Yeah.
There are more than one fish on them. There are more than one muskie on it.
Yeah.
Like almost 100% of the time. Both of us have done it where we've catch one on one side and catch one on the other. There are usually always another muskie on it. So if you catch one, I usually go back again and see if there's another one.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and you've just been like kicking so much butt in the last 2 weeks is while we're pounding on this with that rock bite, you know, mm-hmm. And a lot of people are still in that. They're still in swinging at the weeds. And that's cool. And I mean, you're going to catch fish, but dude, it's just like, I got to give you props and I'm usually on here picking on you, but you have put a tremendous amount of upper 40s in the boat, dude. It's scary.
It's kind of been freaky. I'm like, okay,
well, it's a thing.
Here's
though,
another
like,
one.
The biggest fish, and I actually saw one of the questions earlier talking about Canadian stuff, and like one of the biggest fish I've ever seen land is one my dad tagged years back. Where, you know, his famous line was, for completion's sake, we ought to fish around the other side of this rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had just tagged a 48, and it was just like everyone's chortling and saying, man, that was a good fish, you know, and you sort of get your life reset, you know, and you're going, well, you know, I mean, and even, you know, in Canada, 4-footer, man, it's a heck of a fish. And you're just sort of going, okay. We've put the net away. Everybody sort of regathered themselves, and he went, for completion's sake, we ought to fish the other side of that rock, and it was the biggest muskie I've ever seen in person. You know, and it literally on the other side of a rock that's about the size of a Ford Festiva. You know? Anyway, that's awesome, dude. Like as far as tactics and stuff, you just did that new little article on that mm-hmm. pre-transition. But so it's been when you're seeing the bait fish lower, you're going cranks and are you mixing it up or are you like just is that the only like when you come into this rock and you say the bait fish are at 6 feet, do you do both bucktails and cranks? Or are you just sort of like sticking with one thing or sort of mixing it up?
I'm mixing it up. I'm all dude, I'm all over the place. I'm all over them rocks. I'm throwing bucktails. Sometimes what I do is I have two poles, one with a depth rater on and one with the bucktail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll fish around once with the bucktail, and I'll fish around again with the depth rater.
Right.
Just to cover. It's almost like having two anglers in the boat, but you're the only guy there.
Right.
And you're basically getting all the bases covered on a spot. It takes a little bit longer, but I've actually caught fish doing that the second time around with a different bait.
Yeah. I mean, dude, and that's the thing is you know, as far as when you're solo, you got to really dedicate more time to each spot. It's a crap thing about being a solo angler is you got to fish less spots in a more thorough fashion.
Yeah.
You know, so, but the cool thing is this, folks, secrets and plans and things coming up. Guru's got these babies on tape, boys. So more on that later. Anyway, dude, I'll tell you what. I've been seeing some really good fish hitting the net as well.
And, awesome. Yeah. And,
you know, anybody that's doing the southern thing is, if you're on water that's cool and you can find that cooler water, it's time to get sloppy. You know, and that's the big late season takeaway. Anyway, Tyler, next week our big bad guest will be here. We got a special guest. He just couldn't make it this week. Like I said, we're going to jump in because he's got a ton of questions. I do have something cool I want to talk to you guys about on the podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyler.
Yeah.
There's a bait coming out. from some guys that are going to be working with us there at the podcast that is sort of a classic bait and a reinvent. And I'm just telling you guys, watch out in the future. And we're going to keep you guys abreast of this thing. But I think Muskie Shop's going to have it. I think some other people are going to have this bait. And it's sort of this crew, this Cave Run crew, on this classic 70s muskie bait reinvention into like just a wooden killer. They sent me a video today. I can't say the name yet. This is a hype beast segment. Give me a hype beast, Tyler. Hype beast!
Hype beast!
Hype beast! I see you in the club.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Oh.
Damn, girl. Damn. But these little Kentucky guys, man, dude, I got these two guys that come on my boat that come down here and go fishing that are just ridiculous. And they've worked on some pretty famous gliders out of Kentucky. I'll leave it at that. But there's some hype beast baits, guys. I'm going to keep you guys in the loop on it. But I will shut up. That's just a teaser, okay? That's the teaser. But stop teasing me. Anyone want to take a drink here, Tyler? Make a weird sound or something, because I'm going to do this.
Gurg.
Anyway. First one up. Ohio Brian says, I'm reaching out on this one, but Frigate Maine. Oh, it's a guru's words of wisdom. He says, Mama. Oh, he said, okay, so Ohio Brian has a guru's words of wisdom. My apologies. He says, Mama always said life was like musky fishing. You know it's going to suck. Which brings me up. Tyler, do you have the winner on the guru words of wisdom?
I do. Let me pull it up here.
Speaking of, I want to say something real quick. We've got some people that got baits out in the mail. The Postal Service, as nobody's noticed, the Postal Service is like whack right now. Your baits are in the mail. I've been watching the tracking numbers. I watch this to make sure. But anyway, got a lot of junior in. I can't even talk. Anyway. We got some juniors in lines out in the mail. We got some booker baits, some fun stuff out there rocking and rolling. You guys will get them here sooner than later. Anyway, read me the guru's words of wisdom.
The guru says, nothing is better than having something wet and slimy on the end of my rod.
Oh, my God. Yuckada, 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 schmackada. Who's the winner, Tyler? Who'd that come from?
Let me see here. It doesn't say.
It doesn't say. That's because we're very organized. I promise I didn't just get off the water. It's Ryan Cox. Mr. Ryan Cox, you are the winner. Send me a message. We'll get you a sweet Junior's Inlines out in the mail. Anyway, dude, I'll tell you, we're going to get in the questions here. I am obviously, folks, if you can't tell, I'm lightly pepsicated at this point here at the podcast. Joe's really proud of us, Tyler, by the way.
I would hope so.
Joe Booker is really, really into the meowing, and he's really into the Pepsi, let me tell you. I think it really just aligns with the Midwestern sensibilities of what a muskie podcast should be. I appreciate everybody putting up with us.
And, yeah, I heard Joe's a big cat guy. He likes it when we meow.
This one's from my homie Joe. Good Lord, Tyler Andrews. What's wrong with us, buddy?
A lot of things.
There's a lot of things. What's cool, folks? If you don't think there's a music video going to get filmed for the Musky Mama song when my homie Cole comes down to fish, you're wrong. So
it's going to be epic.
Our dude that won the Musky song contest, he's scheduled his trip. We're going to give away some more guide trips, though, down the road. Correct, Tyler?
Oh, absolutely.
So we're working on that, guys. And I got to tell you, we've been looking at the numbers. You guys are awesome. Me and Tyler, we talk about it, all joking aside, honored, privileged. The fact you guys spend this much time with us is awesome. You guys are all friends. People, if you're new to the podcast, either catch up with the inside jokes or get out.
Thank you so much. It's wild.
Dude, this is like a fun club, and God, we love the emails. Everybody that we don't get to every week. I know it sounds like, oh, corny. We read all the emails. Sometimes it's just like your question's slightly different than a question we just answered or something like that. You guys are awesome. And I mean, it's not ego of anything. And this is like sort of an honest moment on the podcast. Me and Tyler Andrews, the guru, are total nerds. We don't think a lot of ourselves. Of anybody you guys will ever meet that doesn't have a big head, musky fishing is a great equalizer, you know. And there's days on the water where I call Joe and ask these questions, or I call Tyler, and it's just like we never feel like we're setting ourselves above anybody.
Never.
Because musky fishing is tough. It's a stupid sport for people that are way too headstrong, that we've got to prove, because our PPs are tiny, that we can outsmart a big fish. Anyway, first question is Ryan. He said, could you break down night fishing? Like the best lures, colors, lights, how do you see in the dark? What baits do you throw and how do you figure eight? So are you reeling up to your leader tip or the rod tip? Headlights for when you hook up? Thanks from Ryan. And guys, I know we laughed at the last thing I just said. We're me and Tyler are just goofer dorks, man, and you guys are awesome. Anyway, Ryan, I did do a pretty cool article on the app called The Nighttime Is the Right Time, which is it's on the app. And that's where I talk about where I use glow sticks. So anyway, the use of glow sticks, I use that to mark weed beds or rocks or stuff, because the worst thing in night fishing is looking back and forth between your electronics, because your pupils are dilating back and forth.
And they're getting dazed.
And if my pupils are dilated, I want to be dancing like this. That's the only time I like when my pupils are dilated. So anyway, what I want to do is sort of like mitigate how much I'm looking back and forth between my electronics and just casting. So my trick, and just sort of figured out by hook or crook, is taking my flotation buoys and using a zip tie or duct tape, whatever the heck you got, taking some dollar store glow sticks, cracking them, putting them on those spots before I start fishing them. So like, let's say the left side of a reef or the left side of a weed bed, I mark it with a red glow stick, and then I mark the outside point with the green glow stick. So I know I can sort of move my boat just looking at the glow sticks and stay off that thing. I'm still hitting my casts. Night fishing basics is go big and slow. You know, big vibration, big thump, slow baits, which is slow rolling double tens, like a mag Booker tail, a mag slop master, 9-inch shallow raider, big Jakes. Oh, goodness. You know, the Lee Lures flap tail is a heck of a night bait. And just some other stuff that's like big and slow. You got to have a lot of thump in a slow.
Big target.
Yeah, big target, big thump, slow moving, which is pretty much what'll end up on my gravestone.
I'll see to that happens.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Tyler is the executor of my state. Anyway, just a big target for them to hone in on, like that's giving off enough thump. So, you know, at night, I'm sure muskies, nobody really has a clue. Everybody's just sort of guessing. They can see somewhat in the dark, but they can't like dial in and go the difference between purple and black. I don't think at that point,
you know, doesn't matter at all.
You're not going to get away with burning a small bucktail. I mean, you could catch a fish, but in general, big baits, slow presentations, as much thump as you can get. My favorite nighttime bait's a nine-inch shallow raider. And at that point, I've actually jacked the hook size up a good bit, too. And that's just to get a little weight, yeah.
Up your hooking percentage. Yeah, you know, at night, it's easy for them to miss the bait. You know, you and me have night before, and I had that one big fish come up and completely miss, and I'm like, oh, ah!
Me and you
had a heart attack.
We're setting out, me and Tyler Andrews set out on a reef one time till 4 in the morning, throwing, and it was just like your shoulders are tucked up around your ears because you're going, please don't hit, please don't hit, please don't hit.
We don't have lights on too when we're fishing.
Well, that's the thing, is like my rule number one is the less light the better. If you have a headlamp on or something, you're looking out into the abyss there, they're not going to come in.
No way.
Camera lights, headlamps, anything like that's going to turn a fish off. The most I do on my boat, I put up like a little bit of the LED track lighting up under the rail just to give me like, okay, if I look down, I can see my feet. And it's scary, dude. Dude, there's Mr. Okay, you know Mr. Peepers?
Yeah.
That fish. So I caught this fish. We call him Mr. Peepers because the picture that's on my website and all that fun stuff, the best picture I can get is just holding this thing up in front of my face, and you get to sort of see my eyes behind it. It's like I'm by myself. I drop my client off at the dock, and I'm like, I got to catch this fish. The next day, they're planning for like a 20-degree temperature drop, hardcore rain. There's no way that fish is going to hit the next day. And I went, I got to catch this thing. I'm starving to death. And I go, I'm going to catch it. I'm going to give it like 3 hours. I've already guided like 12 hours straight. I go out and, you know, when you're by yourself, I talk to myself audibly, which is pathetic. I'll be like, all right, dude, last cast. Come on. Like, you got to go home at some point. You know, my loving wife has made me food 6 hours ago, and it's just rotting in the microwave at that point. And I went, all right, last cast, and I throw it out, and I come in a figure eight, and I like, and at nighttime, I always give it a little bit more. You know, I'm not going to give it one turn. I'm going to give it a couple of turns. And this is basically the last turn of the last figure eight of the night, and that freaking fish grabbed it. And I thought immediately, like, what have I done? <You know>? Why am I here? Record scratch. Huh? Why am I here? What am I doing to myself? Why on earth is it 4:30 in the morning? I have a 52-inch muskie on. I have no net, man, no headlamp, and here I stand. And it's like, you know, Friday the 13th, Jason Voorhees has jumped out of the lake, and I've got this thing on here. What I can tell you from experience in other night fishing trips, Ryan, the less light, the better. The second light hits a fish, they freak out. Keep it dark until you've played them down. You're going to have to play a fish down at night, because if he sees a headlamp, he's out of there. Hard to net, all that stuff. Anyway, man, Tyler, I'm so Pepsi'd up. It's hard to not just get on massive tangents.
I would like to add one quick thing.
No.
Safety information.
No. No.
OSHA.
No.
I'm going to do it. Wear safety goggles.
Safety goggles. Oh, you almost did put my eye out. Tell that story.
I almost took Steve's eye out. So that was.
It's a close run thing, my friend.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, on that one fish that scared the crap out of me. Almost took Steve in the eyeball. So wear safety goggles, man.
The goggles. You basically wear a hazmat suit at night, correct?
Full Iron Man suit.
Now that is one thing to say is. And just for anybody that wants to get into night fishing, I go over to Harbor Freight, which is like a cheap tool store. I don't know if you guys have them up north. I don't care, but you can get safety goggles for nothing. I get like the sunglasses style safety goggles that are clear, and I wear them at night because Tyler Andrews nearly put a bait in my eyeball. I mean,
that was close.
The back of the bait tinged off the side of my face. Had the bait been laying the other way, I'd be blind in my left eye. Which, if you showed up and your fishing guy had an eye patch, that'd be pretty badass.
That would be pretty cool.
Get in a boat. You know, but, you know, that's some Captain Ahab stuff. But that is true, like, for real. You know, we're always wearing our polarized and all that crap during the day. And it's like me and you are out there at night, dude. And we've done that. Me and you have night fished a billion times together.
Yeah.
You know? And what happened is Tyler went in the figure eight. It's the first turn. The fish grabs the thing. The rod bends. He doesn't have a hook in his mouth. The bait springs back and it comes flying at my head. And the back of the bait hit me in the face, not the belly. because the back didn't have any hooks in it, and the belly, which is an inch and a half away, could have been on the other side. So, and it's not your fault. It's just because you went to set the hook. You weren't even in the eight. You were like on the outer perimeter thereof.
Yeah, it's just he grabbed it weird, and I went to set the hook. I didn't see the fish. I just felt something grab it.
Yeah.
And I set the hook, and as soon as I set the hook, it was just gone. It didn't get a hook in him.
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Musky fishing's not cool anyway, so you might as well be wearing clear safety goggles. Why not?
Nerds.
Anyway, let's move on to James. James says, love the podcast. I fish mountain reservoirs in Colorado for tiger muskie. Is there any difference in lure size preference between purebreds and tigers? The reservoir I fish is gin clear, has lots of submerged boulders, weed lines, and has water temps of 68 degrees as of a week ago. First time and long time. Oh, see what he's saying. First time, long time, love podcast. I've been going to... Oh, excuse me. I read ahead because I'm dumb. James' question ended there. My apology. That's someone else's question. So James ended at the water temps have been 68 degrees there in Colorado. He's got weeds, boulders, and weed lines. What's the difference between a purebred and a tiger? And as far as lure size, I don't see a lure size difference on tigers and pure muskies.
Not at all.
Tigers
eat the same darn bait.
I've been out there. I know there's a Utah bite. There's a Colorado bite. There's a New Mexico bite. There's a Washington bite. There's an Oregon bite. And I'll tell you, musky guys, if you want something funky to do, get out there. There ain't nobody doing that stuff. Anyway, as far as those bites, the biggest difference I've seen is mid-cast triggers. Tigers do not like figure eights. Just in general, it's sort of like a pike. Pike don't like sticking around in the figure eight that much.
Just not in their DNA.
It's just not the way they do it. Some pike, you'll catch a pike in a figure eight every now and again. Not very often. But you've got to focus on the middle of that cast or the last third of that cast, really convincing them to hit. That's my big thing. I mean, I've caught tigers on big baits. I've caught tigers on small baits. The one cool thing in those gin clear waters, hot colors work. You know, bright orange, bright yellow, you know, wicked, crazy fire tiger. Something over the top is never bad for that sort of, you're tapping into that pike DNA where you can get this funky color thing going with those fish. But other than that, other than like the figure eight thing, there's not a lot of difference as far as size class of your baits. You know, you're going to want to downsize when it's a cold front. You're going to upsize, you know, and sort of do the basic musky fundamentals there. But the biggest thing is you're not going to get as many figure eight opportunities on a tiger musky. And these stock, stock tiger muskies, you know, some of these lakes are chock full of big fish.
Mm-hmm. Untapped.
Yeah, I've gone out there and done it, as a lot of listeners know. You know, going to Oregon and Washington, and there's not a soul, man. There's not a musky bait for 1,500 miles.
That's crazy.
And you go out there, and it's like, okay, how many 45 tigers do you want to catch? You know? So it's a killer fishery. The biggest thing for me is learning to focus more on the last third of the cast than I do on a figure eight. I never caught a stock tiger in a figure eight. I'm sure some people have. My personal experience was I really had to get funky with it in that last third of the retrieve because they were going to turn off before they got to the boat. So whether it be dead sticking away from the boat with a glider, whether it be surging bucktails to like, okay, that last third of the cast, I better put the heat on. You know, think of the last bit of your cast as important as your figure eight. I still figure eight when I'm on tiger water because it's just habitual for me. But, you know, if you break your cast down, that last bit is the most important part before you even get to the figure eight. That lasts, 20 feet? Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm throwing a bulldog or a deusa or a glider, I'm dead sticking 20 feet out from the boat. Because in that gin clear water, dude, I've told you, Tyler, like, when I was out and watching, that stuff is clearer than I've ever seen.
Wow.
You know, it's beyond it's beyond Canadian waters clear. It is trout flowage. You can see the bottom at 15 feet. You can see the bottom at 20 feet. So a lot of these tiger guys are up against the shadow of the boat. They're up against, hey, why is there something out here? Because there shouldn't be anything here. Focus on that last 20 feet of your cast. And I'm saying when I get to 19 feet out from the boat, I'm going, what can I do? Because I assume there's a fish behind it. What can I do before I get to the figure eight to really get this thing to commit? That's the biggest thing I can give you. Anyway, next one up. Dude says, first time, long time, me love podcat, meow. I've been going to Eagle Lake in Ontario for nearly 20 years, and due to career shifts, I'm starting to go in September. I'm starting to go in September for the past three years to target muskies. He said, I hear Steve talk about Eagle Lake quite frequently, so I figured I'd send him a note and a couple questions. As far as Eagle Lake, we all know it's a beast of its own. So here's a couple Eagle Lake questions. And Eagle Lake, dude, Lake of the Woods and Eagle are different ball games.
Yeah, it's just everything up there. Each giant musky lake is like its own animal.
It's its own animal. Lock Sewell's different than Eagle.
Lock Sewell's terrifying.
You know, big water, scary water. Nobody has a real good map of the thing, and muskies are only on one side of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What more do you want? So he's got a few questions here. I'm going to break down as quick as I can. The guy's name's Kyle here. He said, how do you go about breaking down this large and diverse body of water when limited maps are available? So if you don't know, there's not a lot of great maps on these big Canadian waters. You don't have this, you know, whatever your little local lake is, we don't have the topo maps and the detailed stuff. Like there could be a rock out there the size of a barn that's not even on the map. So he says, how do you break down these lakes? And it seems as though you can catch a musky. He said, how do you break down these bodies of water in those size areas when it seems you can catch a musky literally around every point and around every island? Is it just experience based and time on the water? Are there specific things you're looking for depending on whether you're in clear waters on the north end of the lake or stained waters on the southern end? So as far as breaking down a lake the size of Eagle is this. I don't fish the whole thing. Never have. I have no clue. I can't tell you what the bite's been in Osborne Bay for 15 years, nor do I care. I stick to one area. Because every inch of that thing has monsters, right? You know, Niven Bay is way different than Osborne Bay. Forget about it. You know, you've got to break that thing down into different parts and go, okay, so if I'm fishing in this bay or I'm fishing down around Century, that's going to be way different than I'm fishing around Eagle Lake Lodge. You know, they might as well be different lakes. It's way too big. So I don't try to eat the entire cake at one time. I go, this is where I'm going to fish. I'm going to dial in on this for better or for worse. Okay. And he says, fish seem to like to follow on Eagle. And I've even heard Larry Ramsell proclaim that the fish and Eagle only feed in deep water and head to shallow water to digest. If this statement is true, how to get these shallow water fish to commit? That statement is not true. If Larry Ramsell said that, he's wrong. I don't care. Whoop-de-doo. Listen, if Larry Ramsell said that and he's right, then call Mezencomer, who fished Niven Bay and has caught like giganto fish in like 4 feet of water. Not true. So let's move on from that statement. Biggest musky Bill Crane ever saw in his entire life was in Niven Bay in like 3 feet of water. We were on the boat. The only 50 Bill Crane ever caught was Dad took the picture. Okay. So, and that was in shallow water. The shallow water fish and Eagle eat, right? Most of the time they're in cold water. Those fish are moving up. I think that'd be a misnomer. I'm not trying to crawl down that rabbit hole, but the fish don't only eat in deep water. They're going to eat in pretty much anything. And he said, any specific lure recommendation? I've moved most of any fish on blades, but I've had a better hookup success on jerk baits. I have to admit, I haven't spent that much time throwing cranks and was planning to this year. You know, the current border situation. So here's the thing. Little factoid, little secret on body like Eagle, right? Regardless of where you're at, it's one of those bodies of water is the classic. Do you know what the best musky lure on Eagle Lake is most years? Tyler, would you like to guess?
Bucktail.
bucktail, and it's the Joe Booker 700 orange blade black skirt Booker tail. That's it. So if you put a gun to my head and say you got to catch a fish on Eagle, that's going to be it, right? With that being said, is what do you think everybody throws up there? You know,
orange blade single 700.
And Kyle, I know if you've been up there for that many years, you've been over on Wendigo. You know, you've been out to Skye's Rock. You've been on Coleman's. If you've been to Eagle, you've been on Coleman's at some point. I have gone into Coleman's and snuck in there after the 57th boat left and caught fish. What I catch them on? Twitch and cranks. You know, it's just like anything else. By year 53 of them seeing bucktails and stuff, a lot of this fish will sort of get a picture of, I don't want to eat that. You know, I clean house on a shallow raider up there. I clean house.
No one throws crankbaits. That's all bucktail stuff.
You know, and to say those fish are conditioned, I don't think so. I don't think it's like they're beat to death or anything. But that's just anywhere I go. You know, crankbaits are the least thrown bait class. People are crankbait owners, but not crankbait throwers.
Mm-hmm.
And crankbaits look a hell of a lot more like a fish than a bucktail in my book.
And they can do different things.
They can do different things. I'm telling you, you know, stuff on Eagle that I'm throwing, I'm all about a Suic. I'm all about a Dancing Raider. The biggest year I've ever had on any Canadian trip was on Dancing Raider on Eagle. I'm all about single blade bucktails. And, you know, I see the boats out there. Where I fish most of the time, I don't see too many people. When I go out to the place that everybody's fishing, I see bulldogs hucking through the air. You know, if I want to throw a rubber, I'm going to throw a Dusa. You know, I'm going to do something different. Whether it's rubber or not, you can, it's just like slight differences if that's the bite. You know, here's my thing, and I'm just sort of like rambling at this point. Here's the deal with Canadian trips. I may have said this previously on a podcast, but I'll say it again. People are so freaked out that they have to catch a fish, right? That they mess up their trips by only doing one thing. They throw bucktails because they know at a certain point it will statistically pay off. At some point...
Man, I remember doing that when I was younger.
At some point, a muskie will eat this. All right? And you sit there, and whether it be the dude that goes to Minocqua, or whether it be the guy that goes to Lac Seul, or whether it be the guy that goes to frickin' Washington State, you go... If I do this all day long, eventually something will happen. That's not how you catch big fish. The way you catch big fish is read the conditions. You know, Kyle, we email me and we can talk on the phone for like 3 hours about the intricacies of what to read. But the biggest thing I can tell people is this. Mix it up. If you're mainly throwing bucktails up there, guess what? You're just one of hundreds of people that are mainly throwing bucktails. I can't tell you how many times I've gone on Coleman's Reef behind. I watch three boats come in and out of there, and I go in there and I throw crankbaits and I catch a fish. I did it yesterday where I watched a guy go through a spot and I went, well, I know he's throwing double tens. Let me do this real quick. Whammo bammo. And I'm sending you a Joe a picture, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it wasn't for lack of pressure. It was for lack of originality. You know, and that's being said, like on a body of water like Eagle, not every fish has been caught. Not every fish has seen bucktails. But I'll tell you, of those spots that everybody knows, unless you got some sneaky stuff up your sleeve like I do, think outside of the box. You know, if you're having a higher, you know, if you're having like way too many follows, and that's what you're getting at, these fish love to follow. In 28 years, I've never had that experience. Where the muskies want to follow more than they want to hit. That might be a figure eight thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that might be a thing where you go, hey, maybe I need to change up my figure eight. Maybe I need a longer rod. Maybe I need to like do some depth changes, which cause speed changes. You know, if I got a fish coming in, I've never, and Tyler, you've heard me say this, and I'm on a soapbox on this one, dude, is I've never had a muskie come in that I didn't assume was interested in eating.
If they're following,
they're like,
you know, I might just eat that thing right there.
You know, and you get the ones that are mouthing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only ones I got no recipe for.
Yeah, I don't know what to do about those boys.
You know, I've talked to Joe about that. I've talked to everybody. I'm not talking about the mouthers. If you guys have done this long enough, you see the one he's chomping behind the bait. You know, if somebody, please, my God, write us at the podcast. If you got a recipe for chompers, you know, ones that are open their mouth, you know, and close and open, close, let me know. But outside of that, you know, I've tried to force feed them the whole bit. If a muskie's coming in, he's willing to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
We've crossed the threshold between,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing. If your experience on Eagle Lake is way different than my experience on Eagle Lake, as far as what fish will do in a figure eight. So anyway, shoot me a message, Kyle. We can wax eloquent about this further. The next one up. Do you think this was from Tyler?
Who dis?
Let me take a drink here. Pepsi Clear going down.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a question from Andrew. And folks, Andrew is the owner of Junior's Fishing Company.
Oh.
Shameless plug here. But, dude, this guy's awesome. Andrew messaged me all the time. We talk, yes. Anyway, he makes those killer bucktails, guys, and we're doing contests for him all the time here on the podcast. But Andrew is a super cool dude. And he says, I recently caught a 47 on an all-black 8-inch Junior's inline on a lake that was less than 500 acres. He said, when I go back, I'll fish this lake a few more times before it freezes. Would you continue to throw dark baits or switch it up? Water clarity is around 2 to 3 feet. What's your go? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. So I've had quite a few things here as far as adult beverages. So we're going to break this down because it's multiple questions. First, he said, would you continue to throw the same color bait if you sort of nail maybe one of the biggest fishes on fishes? Tyler, I'm a wreck. Good Lord.
Blah, 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 blah.
So, dude, it's called I've been up since it's like, what is it? 11:18 Eastern. I started my trip at 5:45 a.m. I got another trip that starts at 5:45 a.m. So that's the schedule. If you ever want to be a muskie guide, welcome to hell. Anyway, he says, I'm going to give you the first half here. I recently caught a 47 on an all-black junior inline. He said, on a lake that's less than 500 acres, when I go back, and he plans on fishing a few more times, should I continue to throw dark baits or switch it up? You take it, Tyler.
If it could be a color preference thing, like right now, I caught a couple high 40s,
mm-hmm.
and it's all been a chartreuse thing. Like anything with chartreuse, just that's just what they want. I haven't caught anything else than chartreuse, so my gut would be telling me this is go back and throw dark baits, see if you can catch another fish. If you don't catch another fish, start experimenting. What's the time frame between the start experimenting? That's kind of up to you. Me, it's about a half a day, and then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna, because if you caught a big fish like that, there's obviously something going on. I would give it about a half a day and be like, okay, I'm gonna try maybe the same bucktail, just a different color, and see what happens.
You know, the thing with that, Tyler, is just like, number one, he should have kept this Feather Junior's inlines he sent me. That's what he should have done. Because this thing, I'm looking at it right now. And he sent me a custom hand-tied purple and white Junior's inline. He should have had that.
Oh, man.
But anyway, what I do, and me, you've done it, Tyler, on the boat together. I call it the voice of reason, which is the timer on the phone. And so what we do, and this goes for anything, whether it be bucktails, whether it be bulldogs, whether it be medusas, whether it be crane baits or shallow raiders or whatever, right,
mm-hmm.
is 30-minute timer. And if you set a timer on your phone or alarm, or a countdown and you go, okay, I need to be switching up my game every 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I am neurotic, and I in a bad way, where I can go from sunup to sundown and throw the same bait.
And, oh, I do the same thing.
And it's just like the worst thing is this, like Tyler, me and you came down, fish with me, and I banged a monster and a glide rater, and you finally, like day two after that, haven't moved anything else. You go, dude, you need to like switch it up.
Well, come on, Steve, try something else.
Right. You sort of went, hey, Steve, I know that worked 48 hours ago and it was a monster fish, but, and that's like our humanistic qualities coming out.
Yep.
Where this worked, I believe in it now. Success in musky fishing is temporary.
It's ever changing.
It's ever changing. And so just, and something that, you know, I told a dad story way earlier in the podcast, but what he used to say about baits, and I try to remind myself of this, and sometimes, like you, I said, when you were down, I lost sight of it. What have you done for me lately?
I like it.
And that's the rule with baits. What have you done for me lately? Just because it caught a fish at sunup doesn't mean it's going to catch a fish at noon.
Muskies can change by the freaking hour, man. It's insane.
So always be open. So what we do on the boat when it's questionable, at least me and Tyler together, is a 30-minute timer. So let's say that, and this has happened, Tyler, you were in the front of the boat on your boat, and you banged a real nice fish on a slop master, right?
Yep.
Every 30 minutes, I was changing out. Change out, change out, change out, change out. Until something changed, whether I got a follow or I got a hookup.
Well, you're trying to see if there's another pattern.
Right. And you go, unless there's another pattern, keep it moving. It doesn't have to be 30 minutes, but don't do what I've done before and the mistake I've made of like 6 days later of throwing the same bait till all the paint's gone. You know, and that's the problem is we get hung up on our previous success. And it's not often that the next fish we catch is on the same bait as the last fish we caught.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just keep an eye on that, because I really, really feel like what will get me in trouble is getting hung up on a big fish or a good fish and thinking that every fish subsequently is going to hit the same thing, you know. And it's just like the 30-minute rule for me is just to keep me moving, you know. Tyler, we've done it before where it's just like I'm on a hot glide bite, right? So yep. I'll do 30 minutes of that and then 30 minutes of something else. And I'll come back to the glider and it's, you know, mix it up. Keep it moving, because I would rather be ahead of the bite than behind the bite. You know, that's where my mind lives, if that makes sense. Andrew from Junior's Inlines also asked, He says, what knot do you guys use to connect your leader to braided line? What do you use?
I use just a power knot. That's what I use.
Power or Palomar?
I think it's one of Joe's like secret knots or whatever it is. Isn't
we both have secret knots then? Maybe this is a whole other topic, because I use like I you've seen my knot, which is like this wacky doodle. I use like this weird Japanese jigging knot. So
he basically does origami with the line, folks.
It's but it ends like, up straight and it never breaks. You know what?
It's crazy.
We'll do a knot, Tyler.
Yeah.
Million listens, knot reveal.
Let's do it. Let's do it. The smoke clears and the curtain lifts. You look at their knots.
Check out me naughty. Naughty girl.
I'm feeling pretty naughty right now.
Anyway, we should do a video on that, because I don't even have a name for my knot. I know the knot you're talking about, which is like a kooky knot. Is it a Palomar that most people use or whatever?
Yeah, it's kind of like a Palomar knot. And then it's got some funky twists through it, and it does all this other stuff. And then it cinches down real nice.
Yeah. Anywho, we should just do a separate knot thing. And he signs off with meow. Guys, Andrew's a great dude. Junior's Fishing Company. Check it out. I say that not because I don't endorse crap. Don't care.
No.
Don't care. I've got more baits than the muskie shop at my house. Not actually, but I got, if you name it, I got it. There's not many lure companies that don't hold to that caliber. I've not seen a juniors that wasn't perfect. I've not seen one that doesn't run straight out of the box. They're not on the podcast because they're making us rich or anything like that. And Andrew can attest is because they have a quality product. If you want a bucktail that runs right and catches muskies, Juniors Fishing Company, period. Love them or lump it. Anyway, next one up is Seymour. Oh man, here we go. Tyler, remember how last week I got befuddled because I read the name and it was Jack something? Me something? Yeah. This one we have a Mr. Seymour Butts, but it's B-U-T-S. He says, Seymour Butts says, hello gentlemen, got a question on something I've been stumped on for a while. If Chewbacca were to go to Panera Bread, oh, he says Pantera Bread. Oh my God. If Chewbacca were to go to Pantera Bread and he got a bowl of French onion soup that was bad, what kind of angry noises would he make? Thanks for the advice. Love the podcat meow. Tyler, what noises would Chewbacca make if he was mad at Pantera Bread? Moving on. And oh my God, please tell me this is a guy in it. I'm not reading this one all the way. Dixie Norm. Okay, thanks guys, I appreciate the funny names. You guys are just a gas bag rat. Dixie Norma says, hey guys, I was wondering, what are you guys doing in the Great White North A on them rainy days to get fish to hit? Love the podcat. Rawr. Anyway, Dixie Normus wants to know, what do we do on rainy days? What's your go-to? We've never talked about it. What's your rainy day thing, Tyler?
My rainy day thing, it depends on what kind of rainy day. There's kind of different types of raining. There's like the downpour. And then there's like the showers that come through. When the showers come through and it's just like off and on, dude, that is my day. Oh,
you know,
I fish all my normal, all my best spots because I know I'm gonna get a fish to eat. It's awesome. I'll fish a bucktail, I'll fish a top raider, I'll fish a crankbait.
And what you're talking about is it rains a little bit. It's not too bad. It's like rainy, cloudy. Ugh.
Yeah, those are the best.
My day, I love those. My day yesterday was that biblical rain.
Oh yeah, you told me about that. That was insane.
I called you like, here I am. I've got a freaking $800 rain suit and it's nice and dry at the house because they called for sprinkles and it was like end times rain. So I'm out here in a pair of shorts and a dry fit shirt, soaking wet. And you know what pulled out of the bag for me was going down to something as basic as a slop master with a willow blade.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is, here's my thing. When it's raining hard, and I'm talking it's banging, I imagine that the surface for a muskie on his lateral line has to feel like machine gun fire. I don't know if I'm right or if I'm wrong, but that's a lot of vibration. So if it's pouring hard, I go deep and I go slow. That's my trick. I know, Tyler, me and you've done it a time or two before on the boat where it's just like those big drops and the rain, the surface is just noisy.
You know? Yeah, it's awful.
And what I'm trying to do is, I don't know if all the muskies are down there, but I'm going to go deep and I'm going to go slow and see if I can stand out. That's the best I got. The one thing I'll say is this. I mean, I've caught a lot of fish in downpours, but not a ton.
No, I haven't done like a gazillion fish in downpours. It's just not done.
No, I mean, before one and after one, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, I caught a really good fish yesterday to the point it was hard to even get a picture off because it was just rocking and rolling. But the way I did that was I went slow as I could, creeping it on the bottom, going, just pick it up. Just give it a look. That's been my go-to. The next one up is from the Wild Chizak. I don't know. What do you? How's that pronounced, Tyler?
I can't see it, so how am I supposed to pronounce it?
I don't know. I'm sorry, folks. I'm just blackout at this point. He said, listen to the podcast every week and love the content. I know you talked about the old Top Raiders having BBs in the prop portion of the body. Wanted to modify a new one and wanted to know what size BBs the old one had in them. Tyler, you've modified a lot of Top Raiders. What do you think there, dude?
Dude, I do some duck hunting and some turkey hunting. I just took some shotgun shells and cut the tops off and just took a couple of those BBs and threw them in there. Just take a drill bit that's just slightly bigger than those BBs, drill a tiny hole on the top, throw a couple of them bad boys in there, and seal it up with some like JB plastic weld, super glue, yep, and all sorts of stuff.
JB weld is like the jam for sealing a bait.
Oh, it's awesome. You'd be disgusted by how much I have in my garage.
JB weld, it'll fix a leaking boat.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Josh says, do you guys spend any time with spoons? I know they're antiquated bait. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, Josh. I apologize. But, you know, do we spend any time with spoons? You know, is it just a northern bait or is it a good musky plug?
It's a good musky plug, man.
Yeah.
I use an old discontinued bait called the Slop Master Spoon. JBO hopefully will bring it back. I've caught muskies on them. I've caught big muskies on them. I use it. I don't use it all the time. I use it for very specific like tactics. If the muskies are in the thick,
like trash. Mega slop. You mega slop, yeah.
They're trash.
Trashed, like me.
They're trash fish. And if it's the thick crap and you're like, if the thought crosses your head, how do I get a bait through that? You go, oh, I'll just throw a spoon. That's when I throw it.
Do you know what my go-to with that is?
What?
It's called, I believe, the Burger King rig. Not the Murder Cabin Burger King. Man. Anyway. I learned this trick at the parking lot of the Minocqua Burger King while Tyler Andrews fed seagulls French fries. Because Burger King's French fries suck, okay? And if you think any different, send me a message to the podcast, and I'll let you know that you're wrong. Anyway, their French fries are nasty.
Nasty. That's nasty.
I take a Daredevil spoon or Daredevil or however you want to say it. I put it behind a 10-inch believer on a trolling thing. And if you put that thing 48 inches behind that, that's my trick. But, you know, I've seen you do it. Where you've pulled some muskies out of like some really thick slop on Lake of the Woods, which is neat, you know, on a spoon. So,
do you remember
the turtle?
I almost caught that the damn snapping turtle. This thing was crazy. There's the biggest snapping turtle I've ever seen. I figurated them for probably like 4 minutes on a spoon.
That is like moments. Is that moments before or after I broke Booker's rod?
I think that was like 10 seconds or 20 seconds after. I'm like, hey, look, there's a big old snapper.
Snapper coming in, boy. Tune in next week for the Noodlin' Podcast, where me and Tyler Andrews give you all our hot tips on noodlin', snapping. Dude, I can't even talk, bro. I can't. Literally, the front of my face is numb. Anyway, keeping it real, folks. I'm just teasing. We're just goobers here. The next one up and the last question, thank goodness, so I can go to bed, is Pete. Pete says, here we go again. I just got to. Sorry. Here we go again. I just got 2 inches.
What?
This is a punctuation joke because it says, here I go, here we go again. I just got 2 inches, period, of rain. God, Tyler, I'm falling apart. I apologize. I'm basically have been up for like 20 hours, I guess, or something at this point. So 2-inch Pete says they got 2 inches plus of rain. And he said he's heading out to his home lake in Vilas County, a designated 50-foot deep clear lake. After all this rain, where do you start throwing? Should I hit rock? Should I hit some shallow weeds? Where should I go? And where should I really be thinking about to hook up with a muskie? And how do you play these conditions after a short monsoon? Do you watch the loons? Love the podcast. Great stuff. We love you, 2-inch Pete. We love you. Anyway, what do you do?
Sorry, I can't.
You want to see my 2-incher, boy? Just had a 2-incher roll in. Anyway, I mean, after a hard rain tower, what are you thinking up there?
I usually look for like neck downs or little hourglass things or river mouse, anything like that where there could be grit from the recent rain. Usually that is like one of my go-tos. If you can find somewhere where the rain causes some sort of current influx, that is like I will go there every time because there will be a muskie waiting for something to float past its head to eat.
And it's usually a fish that's not too far away to begin with, though.
No, it's usually just like right there.
Yeah, he was just around the corner, but he's moved in. When you have runoff, you have whether it be bank, it doesn't have to be creek runoff either. I've made things work on Gene Clear Lakes on the steep side of the bank.
Yeah, where there's a like a real big hill.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to have an influx of water. The only thing is not I'm not looking for an influx of cold water either, though.
No.
And sometimes after the monsoon, it can be tough because they put the feed bag on before the monsoon. Mm-hmm. And it depends on pressure. It depends on a lot of factors, whether that monsoon is good or bad. But, yeah, creek mouth, steep banks, you know, anything that's going to, like, induce water fluctuations, it's gonna blend those two different bodies of water, runoff, creek mouth. That's what I'm looking for. Tyler, we fish some stuff that has, you know, it might be on a river, not a river system per se, and it's not a reservoir per se, but it's got an in and an out. There's a lot of Wisconsin lakes that have a creek coming into them and a creek going out, right?
Yeah.
You know, after a hard rain, we'll score on the part that has rain coming in, you know, the where the water is being introduced, because that's flushing things downstream sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Rain can ruin things, and it can also turn things on. It's just a matter of what is it going to be. Is this a good rain or a bad rain? But after like a heavy monsoon, like downpour, you just got to get a read for things. Sometimes these fish don't even move, though.
Yeah, sometimes they're just like, you know what? I don't really care about this rain. I'm going to stay home.
Yeah, my game plan is first couple spots are normal spots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like we're talking earlier about the 30-minute rule. Okay, give it three spots. You know, give it three spots that they were working or I was previously moving fish. And then you go, these things moved. So then I'm going to go to those shallow creek mouths coming in, or I'm going to go to runoff points, or I'm going to go to plunge points or neck downs. Excuse me. And I'm going to go to these places that are narrowing down that might have a little bit more current or influx. And then if there's nothing there, then you're going to go deep because you go, this rainstorm was really bad and these fish hated it. You know, so sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad in a rainstorm, but be flexible. Tyler, I'm exhausted. I got to guide my butt off tomorrow again. It has been another illustrious Muskie 360 podcast. We appreciate all of you. What do you got to say, guru?
We're sorry we're so dumb.
We're sorry we're so dumb. See you next week, folks. Thank you.
The Muskie 360 podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.